This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Rare off day for Packer. Daughter had to graduate from college, so the man had to take the show off. let me ask you this. Before we get to this discussion, knowing Packer like we do, had Emerson's graduation been at 5 o'clock? Mark do the show this morning? Or, I mean, you know, he's not that far from Clemson. I'm going to say absolutely.
Definitely. Definitely. The question is he doing the afternoon show today? Because, like, it'll be over in time for him to do the afternoon show, as far as I understand. Okay. So maybe not. Maybe Mrs. Packer tells him, hey, no, Emerson's graduating. This is her day. You're not working today. You can have your egg custard tomorrow. But today it's all about Emerson. Yeah. That's a good question. That's a good question.
That's true. It's not a true or false question, by the way, unless Josh is scribbling it down now for true or false that comes up in about 15 minutes here on a Thursday. Also in the hour, Parker Messick from Florida State and Blake James from the other day, and a fascinating discussion about name, image, and likeness that he had with Mark and I, and you'll enjoy it if you missed it on the other show. Roddy, let's go back to some spring observations. And we talked about individuals earlier. The league itself, I mean, Clemson is going to get a lot of national attention, rightly so. What they're doing really kind of separates them and a couple of other schools from kind of the rest, if you will, until somebody can kind of challenge and stay there consistently. But when you look at specific teams, and I said earlier, we had five of these games. I'm encouraged by what I saw just about every place we saw a spring scrimmage or a spring game, as it were. I mean, you know, like at Georgia Tech, you mentioned Jahmyr Gibbs. There's some intricacies about Georgia Tech beyond Jahmyr Gibbs and beyond Jeff Sims I think you can be encouraged about.
I completely agree. And starting with them, I think Georgia Tech fans should be really excited, not only about the development of those two star freshmen, Sims and Gibbs, but also some of the transfers they got. I want to start on Sims, though. Yeah. It's a spring game, and you know, the quarterbacks aren't getting rushed. It's basically 7-on-7. But he looked really accurate in that spring game, which in that sort of controlled environment is better than obviously the alternative. But his delivery was on time. He was hitting guys like Kyrick McGowan, who I think is going to be a really impactful transfer from Northwestern. Ace Ely from Maryland, a guy who was honorable mention All Big Ten, transfers to Georgia Tech at linebacker. He's going to be really good for him. And you know, we saw that offensive line. That offensive line is getting bigger and more skilled. So I think there's some things to be really excited about. The problem, Wes, though, the question for Georgia Tech coming out of the spring is who's going to kick the ball? Because the punter that they're going to have next year and the kicker that they're going to have next year were both overseas, so we didn't quite – or excuse me, the kicker was still at Tennessee. He's transferring in. So we didn't quite get to see the special teams game. I don't know if that worried you at all, but for me, when you're replacing Presley Harvin, I would have loved to have seen someone booming some punts.
Well, you're right, and the punter, I think, was in Ireland or someplace like that. The place kicker's in school at Tennessee finishing the spring semester. So the kicking game was at discretion, if you will. Look, after the Georgia Tech spring game, I just know that you've got 2 degrees from Georgia Tech and you'd need a third to figure out the scoring system during the game. But we saw a lot of really good collective performances. So at the end of the day, you can be encouraged if you're Georgia Tech. Here's the thing I would be concerned about. Your schedule's really difficult. Your schedule is incredibly difficult. You may have the hardest schedule in the league. Now, we haven't seen all the analytics run on it, but nonetheless, you're getting better as a program. Roddy, the place where –
I will go ahead and tell you, Wes, I don't need to see the analytics. It is the hardest schedule in the ACC. It is. You've got Clemson every year. You got Notre Dame. You got Georgia. That's two top five teams in Clemson and Georgia, and the top 20 team in Notre Dame, maybe a top 15 team in Notre Dame. They start the ACC schedule with UNC, Clemson, and Pitt. three teams that may have the three best quarterbacks in the league when it's all said and done. It is a brutal schedule.
Wow.
The month of November is tough as well because that's when Notre Dame and Georgia fall. You also get Boston College and Miami. The schedule is really tough. So the team's going to be better, but it's a tough slog for the Jackets.
All right. NC State, I came away from their spring workout with as much optimism about any of the five schools that we saw in the spring. And granted, I know we watched Boston College, we watched Florida State, but NC State, and again, not everybody played. We didn't see Peyton Wilson. We didn't see Bam Knight. You don't have to. But what I saw from Devin Leary, what I saw offensively, I just was encouraged by where Dave Doran's team is. Now, I know they're in the same division with Clemson, Roddy, but what caught your eye about the Wolfpack?
I think exactly what you mentioned, the number of proven commodities on both sides of the ball is really what stood out. And I am really excited to see this offense in its second year under Tim Beck with a full spring, a full summer, which they didn't get a year ago, and all the talent they have returning. Porter Rooks, a receiver that people are going to get to know this year, but they've also got Emeka Emezi coming back, one of the best receivers in the conference. Thayer Thomas, who has been super reliable. Devin Carter, another big receiver. And by the way, Thayer Thomas can throw it a little bit too. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but the fact that you've got Devin Leary, the fact that you have this group of wideouts, the group of running backs, the returning talent and overall ability on the offensive line, this offense under Tim Beck has the potential to be one of the best in the ACC. I'm talking like top two or three in the ACC. So I am. They have been really impressive. And that's not even to talk about the defense, which you just mentioned, with all the guys they have coming back, really at all three levels, and some impactful transfers. So I think there's a lot of reason for Dave Doran to be excited.
Yeah, you mentioned Tyler Baker Williams in our opening hour. I would throw Shaheem Battle in there. I would throw Drake Thomas. Yeah. I mean, Daniel Joseph, Roddy, at defensive end. I mean, it's pretty interesting where NC State is, and a lot of people are just kind of saying, well, you know, maybe. And, yeah, you got to prove it, but they're bullets in the gun, so to speak.
This is as talented a team as Dave Doran has returned since the Bradley Chubb team, I would say. When you talk about the quarterback position, the people that they have on defense, I mean, Peyton Wilson very well could have been the defensive player of the year in the league last year. We haven't mentioned Tanner Engle and the guy on the defensive line like Savion Jackson. You mentioned Drake Thomas. You're going to have Peyton Wilson and Isaiah Moore out on the field at linebacker for them just about every down. But if you're in a down where you think they're going to run the ball and you need the more physical guy, you stick Drake Thomas out there. If you want the longer, more athletic guy, you stick Vi Jones out there, who's also an excellent blocker of kicks as well. I just think there's a lot of reason to be super fired up about NC State. And if they can put it all together, I don't know if they're going to challenge Clemson. I don't think they will, just off of seeing just off of the preseason and who Clemson is. But this should be the second best team in the Atlantic and maybe the second best team in the league.
Yeah. Now, that's kind of where I am in the neighborhood with NC State. I think that opportunity is there for sure. Does the same opportunity exist at Pittsburgh? I think a lot of people, it's Carolina, Miami in the Coastal. I think people are forgetting about kind of where Pitt is. But, Roddy, a year ago, we were trying to sort out offense and knew they might be pretty good on defense. This year, we think they might be pretty good on offense, and are we sorting out the defense for Pat Narduzzi?
Yeah, but I honestly don't think the defense needs that much sorting out under Pat Narduzzi. You know what you're going to get. You're going to get an aggressive brand of defense. It's going to create some havoc.
Right.
They're going to play man-to-man on the back end, and they're going to challenge you. They're going to challenge your protections, and they're going to make you win one-on-one battles against their defenders. And if you can do that, you're going to have some success. But offensively, I think they're so good that even if that defense goes through a little bit of growing pains early, and they've got a lot coming back, so I don't think it's going to be as extreme as some people may say, but that offense is so good. You look at Kenny Pickett, first and foremost, who, fifth-year guy, had an opportunity to go play in the Senior Bowl a year ago, decided not to do it, returned to Pittsburgh so that he can continue to improve. Kenny Pickett's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in this league. Then look at the receivers. Jordan Addison's back. Taysier Mack looks excellent coming back. Shockey Jacques-Louis comes back as well. and then Lucas Kroll, who's basically like getting a recruit, you know, a guy who played for you a little bit last year but was banged up coming in, then had the season-ending injury, hasn't had an opportunity to get healthy. They're going to move him around. And at the running back position, they started to run the ball better at the end of last year with Vincent Davis. And then Pat Narduzzi did the Jedi mind trick, where he names Vincent Davis the starter at running back leading into the spring. Yeah. And what does that do? It lights a fire under Israel Abanikanda. So Abanikanda looked as good as any running back as we saw this spring across the conference. So their ability to run the ball, Kenny Pickett, the offensive line, played a lot of guys last year. So they've got a lot of experience. The receiving core, again, it sounds like the same thing I said for NC State. This got an opportunity to be one of the two or three best offenses in the league. So I'm fired up. And the question is, we kind of went through this in the game that we did. How do you replace two All-Americans on the edge? That's going to be the monster question. Will they be as disruptive? I don't know. But that's going to be the challenge for them, especially defensively. You're losing two All-Americans. That's no small task, as people around the country can tell you.
Well, the one thing that all these schools have is they're developing what Clemson has had, and that is depth all over the board. The one thing that I learned from the Clemson spring game, they got players at every position, Roddy. I mean, they've got guys who are as capable at running back as – I mean, and Ches Malusi, I know, went into the transfer portal, but Michael Dukes, Will Shipley, Lynn J. Dixon, Phil Maffa. I mean, it just – that's four guys right there, and we're not even scratching the back end of the chart. I mean, defensively, they seem to have guys everywhere. I mean, most people have gone through this spring and not talked about Sheridan Jones. I mean, it's amazing the number of players Clemson has and the depth they have across the board. I'm not sure it's, you know, we talk about most schools in 44, two at each position on both sides of the ball. I'm not sure in Clemson's case the number might not be closer to 60 right now.
I think you hit the nail on the head. In writing down notes for Clemson, it was running back depth, impressive. Wide receiver depth, impressive. Defensive line depth, impressive. Secondary depth, impressive. Like every single position, it seems like they've got not only one or two top end guys that are really good, they've got really functional, talented depth at every single position, with the exception of quarterback. And that's going to be the big question as we get into the fall. Only one of them plays, but who's going to be the guy to back up DJ Uiagalelei after we saw Tyson Pumachon go down with that injury in the spring game, which is just heartbreaking. He had such a good spring and such a good game. But at every other position, man, this team is absolutely loaded. And while you're not going to have – I don't think you'll have a guy put up Travis Etienne numbers at running back. You may not have a guy put up T. Higgins numbers at receiver. As a group, those two groups are going to be as good as anybody, maybe in the country, but certainly in the league. So, look, it's Clemson. They just reload. It's easy to say that. But in terms of depth and really talented freshmen as well, like Clemson was incredibly impressive. We didn't see Andrew Makubo, but I mean the coaches raved about that guy.
I will say this: you're a little concerned about Dabo as a spring game referee. Some of these coaches with a whistle in the spring game is, you know, the sack thing gets to be a little discretionary, doesn't it?
Again, like we all have things we need to improve on. I've got stuff I have to improve on, Wes. You know, I'm sure you do as well. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. But Dabo is a spring game referee. I give him a C. Some of those sacks weren't sacks, Coach. I'm just saying. And honestly, we were in his ear the whole time. He could have overturned this interception. That was an interception that he had the power to overturn. Didn't want to do it. I get it. You want to be fair to the refs on the field. Don't want to upstage them. But spring game refereeing, I think, is something that a lot of coaches across the league – I'll throw Jeff Collins in that mix too. There were some non-sacks called, or there were some sacks not called in that one as well. Like, we got to pick it up in terms of the refereeing. We get on these refs. The refs should have gotten on the coaches in the spring game, and you and I saw it up close and personal.
We got a late whistle, by the way, in the Jeff Collins effort on the Friday night at Georgia Tech, a late, late whistle. Mm-hmm. That they didn't blow a whistle. Then they had another whistle. Man, it was like, whoa, okay, now skating that edge of discretionary officiating. But it's funny. It's funny to watch these guys. The scoring systems are out of whack sometimes because they are trying to make it competitive for every snap. But nonetheless, we did see Duke, and we saw it in the fog. It was a lot of practice intensity. We did see some scrimmaging. I will say this. Mateo Durant's pretty good, Roddy. Mateo Durant may have a chance in this league this year. He could surprise some folks.
I absolutely think he will, and I think a lot of it will go to the fact that they've got a lot of talent on that offensive line that maybe they haven't had in the past. You know, David Cutcliffe told us when our offensive lines were the best, we had NFL talent, whether it was Laken Tomlinson or other guys that were either later draft picks or undrafted free agents. And he thinks they have that kind of talent on the offensive line now. And that'll help a guy like Mateo Durant, who is legit. I mean, a guy that's, you know, 6'1", that's a shade under 200 pounds, but can absolutely fly. He looked excellent in the spring. I think Gunnar Holmberg will take better care of the football. And defensively, Duke's going to need to rebound. I mean, the Duke defense that we saw in stretches last year just wasn't a Matt Guerrieri, Ben Albert defense. It was not the defense that we saw a couple years ago, despite the experience. And I know they had some injuries, but they're going to need to be better. You know, we talked about Shaka Hayward earlier. I am really excited about him. Mm. Replacing DeMakeji and Rumpf is going to be tough. But I think Duke will be better on the offensive line in particular, at receiver as well. The quarterback play will help them there. I just hope, Wes, I just hope that they play as hard as they did when that dummy with the number 20 jersey came out. Because if they play that hard all year, they're going to win a lot of games.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. Roddy Jones is here on a Thursday. Coming up, Parker Messick, the Florida State pitcher who likes striking people out. He'll join us. Luke Brown, by the way, in the 9 o'clock hour, also from baseball. He is dealing Parker Messick deals. Dax Holyfield, also from Virginia Tech, will be here as well, the linebacker who they just kind of finished up their spring program, not their spring football, the spring like strength and conditioning stuff. We'll talk to Dax about that as well. But first, let's go to the ACC Network headquarters, if we will, Bristol, Connecticut, Constitution State, the voice of victory, ladies and gentlemen. You hadn't heard this, Roddy? He is the voice of victory now. Josh Macri.
I've not heard this.
The voice of...
I've not heard that. I hope he takes it easy on
you,
though.
Oh, yeah.
Of course we will, Roddy.
Yeah, voice of victory, Josh Macri, is here for True or False, presented by Dish.
Yeah, Pac's not here to give us the true Dish read, so you're going to have to
Dish.
You're going to have to do it on your own. But you did a decent job, true. Roddy, you think you're ready
Thank
for
you.
Some of these true or false questions?
False. I don't know, honestly. I figure, you know, there's two answers I can give, so I got a 50-50 shot.
True. That's a good point. Yeah. The first one should be a layup for you, hopefully, because it's in your area of expertise, football. But we'll see how you do. The ACC had 4,000-yard rushers a year ago, none of whom returned this season. But, true or false, the league will produce 4,000-yard rushers this year.
Ooh. Wes, how does this work? Do you go first or do I go first?
You go first on this one. I'm not touching this one first.
Oh, man.
I'm not touching this one first.
I'm going to say true. It's not going to be the ones you think, though. Like, I don't think you're getting one out of Georgia Tech because despite Jahmyr Gibbs and my excitement about him, I don't think you're getting one out of Georgia Tech. I think this guy is one of them. I think Mateo Durant's one. I'm not sure you get one out of NC State because of the depth of that running back room, just like Georgia Tech. I don't think you get one out of Clemson, but I do think guys like Sean Tucker – from Syracuse, a guy like Israel Abanikanda from Pitt, a guy like we saw Mateo Durant from Duke. I think Miami's got three really good running backs. I'm not sure any of those guys go over 1,000 because they're going to split carries. But I would guess we get four, maybe just sneak under, just sneak over the number of four. So I'm going to go true here.
I'm going to go Mateo Durant. Ty Chandler of Carolina, the transfer from Tennessee. I'm going to take him.
Okay.
At 1,000 yards. You like that call?
I do. I do. I did not have him marked down. I had UNC marked down as a no, but I can see them going over.
See?
With what they did last year.
I'm going false, though. I only think they're going to be three. I think Durant, Ty Chandler, and Kenneth Walker III at Wake Forest. I think those will be the 3,000-yard backs.
See, I had Abana Kanda, I had Sean Tucker, I had Mateo Durant, and then I'm going Wake Forest with Christian Beale Smith. I'm going Wake Forest with Beale Smith.
Or Christian Beale Smith, not Kenneth Walker. Christian Beale Smith. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Christian Beale Smith.
It's tough
to
remember which one was there and which one wasn't. But yeah, Christian Beale Smith.
I'm sorry.
I think we get four. And then you mentioned Ty Chandler at UNC. Like I think he's got a shot. They split carries so much, and I got to see Ty Chandler in the open field. Those two guys last year in the open field were monsters. So I'm gonna go true.
Roddy, for the scoreboard, you went true. I went false, Josh. There we go. We gave you a lot of ancillary stuff on behind our
ancillary
true or false,
stuff
Josh.
Is fine. Yeah. Ancillary stuff is fine, and ancillary is a good word. It's an SAT word. Proud of you.
There you go.
All right, from football to baseball. Notre Dame and Florida State play a massive series this weekend, which will feature the two top home run hitters in the ACC, Florida State's Matt Nelson, who has 20, and Notre Dame's Nico Cavadas, who has 15. True or false, those two gentlemen will combine for at least 5 big flies this weekend.
Ooh. All 3, by the way, here on ACC Network.
True.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Wes, am I still going first? Is that how – do I go first every single time?
Yes. Guests go first.
Okay.
Guests are first.
I'm going to go false on this one. I saw Matt Nelson up close and personal in a series against Georgia Tech at McNeese Baseball Park, and the dude drops bombs. Nico Cavadas has been doing it. But these two pitching staffs are two of the best pitching staffs in the conference at not giving up home runs. Both of them in the top 3 in terms of home runs allowed on the good side, not the bad side. So I'm going to go false here, Wes.
False, Josh. False. I agree. I think you're dealing in the the matchup of pitching and hitting. Both can do it. That's why they both had good years. Both can hit. 5's a really big number for two guys in a 3-game series.
Yeah, 5's
so I'm
pretty
rich. False.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's stay on the diamond here. Despite being second in the Coastal Division, Roddy, your Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets have struggled at home this season. They're just 9-12 in Atlanta. They host red-hot Clemson this weekend, with the Tigers coming in having won 7 in a row. But we have seen some strange things happen in ACC baseball this year. So true or false, the Jackets will buck the trend and their home woes and take the series against Clemson.
Oh, man. I'm actually doing every game of that series this weekend. But I'm going to say false on this one. One, because the Jackets have, like you said, they haven't been great at home. And two, the starts on the weekend have been up and down, to say the least. They've struggled a little bit on Sundays, although now it seems like they figured it out. Andy Archer didn't start for them last weekend. So I think the pitching is the big reason I'm going false. They haven't hit particularly well at home either, so I'm going to go false.
Did you see what the freshman did for Clemson last weekend? Did you see that? Caden Grice?
Yeah. Pretty good. Yeah, Clemson's on fire,
hit one
too.
He's capable of Fowler Street, Roddy. He's capable of Fowler Street.
Oh, yeah.
Grice, he's – I mean, okay, good. Just so we know, Fowler Street is the street that runs behind right field at Russ Chandler Stadium. By the way, Aubrey Huff of Miami one time hit one across Fowler Street on the fly and broke up a party over there in the spring many, many years ago, back when we had the BB Core bats and all that. I'm going to say false here, too.
People still tell stories about one that Bo Jackson hit over Fowler Street, too. Like, still tell stories about it to this day about Bo Jackson hitting one over Fowler Street.
It's all crazy. But I'm going to say Clemson wins that series. Georgia Tech's in a fight now. This is going to be interesting down the stretch for Danny Hall's team and the way it sets up. Okay, Josh.
All right, guys, one more. We replayed our interview with Bobby Muse a little while ago, talked about bats in the meeting room. So True or false, a bat would be the worst critter to discover in your team meeting room?
Oh, see, I said false. I said it at the time, and I'll say it now. It's got to be a raccoon. Raccoons are crazy, man. Like, you ever seen a raccoon in your trash can? You come out and the thing's just staring at you, and it hisses, and it's got the claws, and it's got the mat. Raccoons would be the worst. No to raccoons. I'll take a bat over a raccoon. Although if you're really going to put my feet to the fire, I'm not taking either. I'm running out of the meeting room. Meeting's canceled. I'm out of there, Wes. I'm gone.
That's
no
exactly
way.
Right.
Absolutely not.
That's exactly right. Nope. A bat would be the worst thing to discover in a team meeting room. True. Anything would be bad to discover in a meeting room. Snake, bat, yep. Any of it.
No. If there's a snake, we're never returning to the meeting room. Like, we're never going back. That's it. The meeting room's done. Maybe the hotel. Maybe the whole hotel is done.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham Thursday show rolls on. Roddy Jones in. And again, get the baseball vibe here at the halfway point. Parker Messick of Florida State, one of the best pitchers in the ACC, maybe it's top left-hander with a 4-2 mark in league play, joins us, Roddy, from Tallahassee. Parker, first of all, thanks for the time. Good morning. And you guys are out of school. Exams are over. This is baseball and more baseball from here on out, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it is.
Yeah, well, Parker, what's that like when you get out of school and you can focus on only baseball? How does that change the way you approach things? What does that allow you to do?
It takes away a whole nother just stress level that comes along with being a college athlete, and just it gives you more time to get your body right and prepare for each weekend series, and you even have more time when you have midweek games just to recover and not have to worry about that extra schoolwork. You can get some more film study in and more recovery work in.
Hey, Parker, take us through kind of what this year – I mean, we know last year was just unfortunate, among other things, and frustrating and disappointing. So how different has this been? Is this, like, real normal, even though it's still not as – maybe as comfortable as we've become accustomed to in college baseball?
Yeah, as far as the season goes, all the rules and everything, it's felt like this is my first real season, I guess. So it's felt pretty normal that everyone's done a good job of keeping the season on track. It may be a little bit shortened and a different kind of season setup, but it feels like a real season, and we finally got things rolling, and they're doing a great job of making it pretty normal.
Parker, I want to touch on that a little bit, because, like you said, you were on campus last year. The season was canceled. This is your first real season. But in between last year and this year, what did you work on? What did you go back to the toolbox to develop to make you so effective this season?
I definitely knew I was going to be a starter coming out of last year. I got a couple of bullpen roles. I think my longest outing was 3 innings, just being a freshman and working out of the bullpen. And what I really wanted to work on is getting my stamina up. So over quarantine, I really took the time, took it as an advantage to work on my body and boost my stamina, help me go longer in innings, throw a little bit harder, work on a new pitch. I kind of just developed every aspect of my game to that way I knew when I came in and had to fight for that starter role that I would be in the best possible shape and put myself in the best position to succeed.
Man, I say you've embraced the starter role. You got 4 games with 10 or more strikeouts, 91 and 62 1/3. Take us through working games and running the strikeout total up there. Is that kind of where you want to be in this process?
Yeah, I definitely want to be a high strikeout guy. I mean, that's just kind of a bonus to the game. The way I pitch is I really just try and pound the strike zone. I try and limit my walks, and those turn into Ks sometimes because you're just filling up the zone, and some hitters don't like a lot of strikes to be thrown at them all at once. So that's just part of my game, and I just try and pound the zone and work different pitches. Hit, throw all my pitches for strikes and move in and out of the strike zone. And it's worked for me this year, so I'm going to continue doing it.
Well, Parker, not only have you been one of the best in overall strikeouts, but you're one of the best at getting strikeouts with guys looking. So I need to know, from a power pitcher, a guy who does it in multiple ways, What's better, when you get a guy struck out, swinging or looking, and why?
I think it all depends on the hitter and the count and what they're looking for. And our pitching coach does a good job of changing looks each at bat and giving them something, a different pitch to look at, and maybe the same pitch just in a different location to change their eye levels and just confuse what they think's coming versus what they're actually about to be swinging at. And the more I can make my pitches all look the same out of my hand, the more likely I have a chance of them either freezing up on a pitch or swinging at something in the dirt.
And I was going to ask Parker, is that the most difficult piece of this process, is throwing 2-3 different pitches from the same arm slot to try and make them all look like it's going to be the same?
Absolutely. I mean, that's tunneling is a big part of pitching, and that's probably one of the hardest things that people try and do. And if you can really do it right, it helps your game a lot. And trying to throw any of the four pitches or three or four pitches that pitchers have in any certain count for a strike and make it all look the same is definitely one of the harder parts of pitching.
Now, Parker, you guys are gearing up for a big series against Notre Dame. Obviously, Notre Dame, the team at the top of the Atlantic Division. What's been the message from Coach Martin going into this series? What's been the overall thing that he's been talking to you guys about?
It's pretty much the same speech every week. I mean, we know they're a good team, but we're going to go up there and play our baseball. We've played pretty good on the road this year. I mean, it's nothing's going to change for us. We know they're a great team. We're a good team, too. So we're going to go up there and give them our best ball, and hopefully it's a really good series.
Parker, we're having a hard time sorting this out. We were just talking about the segment before you joined us here. You've got great pitching on both sides. You got great hitting on both sides. What gives this weekend? I mean, do you almost have to kind of process that and move forward here? How does it play in your mind?
Yeah, I do know they're a good hitting team, but nothing's going to change on my end. I'm going to do film review the same way I do film review every week, and I'm going to pitch to my strengths, and they're obviously going to hit to theirs, and whoever comes out on top is going to. And I don't think I don't believe in changing the way I pitch just to accommodate for a team. So I'm just going to go out there and do my thing, and hopefully I can neutralize their pretty good offense.
Yeah. Well, the reason that you come to Florida State is to play in series like this and to go to the postseason and have success there. But coming into college for you, was it always Florida State? Was there any shot that you were going anywhere else, or as a guy from the state of Florida, was it always the Seminoles?
I had, growing up as a little kid, I didn't really have a college team. Sometimes I would actually cheer for the Gators, but once I found my home at Florida State, I was so happy that I chose to be here, and I actually ended up getting to pitch against the Gators freshman year, and ended up, that was my best game of my freshman year. So I'm glad I got to pitch against them and really embrace the role as a Noel.
I wanted to ask you about Matt Nelson. He's had a great year. Obviously, I know he catches you, but we've watched him at the plate. How good a job does he do at the other aspect of this? I mean, I think sometimes we get sidetracked by watching him hit home runs, and we forget about all the other important details he does in making your team good. Take us through working with him when you start and the relationship you guys have.
When I talked about me pounding the zone, Matt is a big contributor in helping me pound the zone. He steals a multitude of strikes. He makes some iffy pitches look so pretty, like they're right down the middle of the plate. He's a true captain on the field. I mean, he gives his body up for us. He'll drop and block for any pitch. I mean, he's always banged up after games, but you'll never see him miss a game. He's a true leader on the field. I mean, he makes me look like a lot better of a pitcher than I really am. The kid's a beast on both sides of the ball.
All right, Parker, when you guys are going inner squad, good on good, when you're pitching to guys on the opposing side, who's your least favorite hitter on your team to face in practice?
Believe it or not, lefty on lefty, Robbie Martin has my number for whatever reason. I used to get him out freshman year, but this year he sees everything I have for whatever reason. I usually don't struggle versus I wouldn't say I struggle versus anybody except for Robbie in scrimmages, but he sure has my number.
We were just watching the clip of the Carolina series. I mean, the lefty on lefty was a dust off. I mean. You were rolling against the lefties of the Tar Heels that Scott Forbes threw it there. I think he had 12 Ks against Carolina. So To find out that Robbie Martin's got you a little bit in the bucket is that's a little concerning, Parker. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Yeah, I know. Everyone's always shocked by that answer, but that kid can hit me. I don't know what to say. I think he had like two, three, four bombs off me, like in the early or fall and early spring, just in inter squads.
Okay.
I think that means he's getting tipped off. I think that means he's paying someone in the dugout to tip your pitches. Honestly,
I don't know.
You've been too good against lefties, and it's a good thing that he plays for you guys, so you don't have to worry about it.
Seriously.
Hey, Parker, we ask one question on this show. Mark has a traditional question, and we pose it to every student athlete we have on Packer and Durham. In your time at Florida State so far, what's been the hardest class you've taken?
Oh, hardest class was definitely, I think it's macroeconomic theory. It was impossible. I could not grasp the knowledge of that class. I had to study countless hours for that one.
But you got through it.
Wasn't Pac an econ major? Wasn't Pac an econ guy at Clemson?
Yeah, yeah. Pac's econ at Clemson. We still got to get some sort of declaration on exactly what all that econ was.
Confirmation
in the 80s. But yeah. But Parker, you got through the class. Bottom line is you survived, right?
I survived. Yes, sir. Yeah. I did.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Thursday, Packer in Durham. Roddy's here. Pack's at Clemson. So if you're headed down to Clemson today for graduation exercises, be on the lookout for a cat driving a big red F Ford 150.
Yep.
Right? I mean, there you go.
Absolutely. And carrying an egg custard, which is important. Like, I hope he's not carrying graduation, but you never know.
He's not. No. No, no, no. The egg custard's in a refrigerator in Charlotte waiting on tomorrow's show. Coming up, Dax Holyfield of Virginia Tech, Luke Brown of Louisville Baseball, all before we're done at 10 o'clock. We had Blake James on the other day and got into a lot of issues, name, image, and likeness being one of the principal ones. But we started the interview with Blake James the way we just finished it with Parker Messick, Roddy, from Florida State. Because during the break, before we started the interview, Blake said, aren't you going to ask me about what my hardest class was? So we did.
I think it was Business Law 415 was the one that really gave me a good lesson. So that'll be the one I'll throw out there.
But you've applied it well, even though I must tell you, a little disappointed, given the fact that we've seen you with palm trees in the backdrop. We've seen you in the Northeast Coast, and now you come. I guess you said, hey, it's time to use the on-campus studio, which every school has forked a nice piece of change to do state-of-the-art. So I see that we've now come full circle with our interviews with you.
I know. I'm a little disappointed that I only have the typical background here that you get from so many. I'll try to make my next one a little more exciting.
I tell you what, though, speaking of exciting, nothing could have been crazier than the state of Florida with the name, image, and likeness legislature last week, where it was a fake left, go right, it's on, it's off, we're pushing it back, but now we've kind of got it back on track. How would you describe your emotions given that last week? Because it was all over the map.
One, it got me completely by surprise. Again, I thought it was something that obviously was done and in place. We had the governor here in June of 2020 signing the bill into law. Our students were excited for it. Our administration was preparing for it. Obviously, it's the right thing to do. And so to also have that curveball come late Wednesday night, and honestly, I don't think I was aware of it until Friday or Thursday morning. And again, credit to the government relations team at the University of Miami. I know they were working with some other schools in the state, and obviously appreciate the our representatives there in Tallahassee pivoting back and getting it right for our students.
Blake, I know you went to social media after the resolution was finally corrected, at least in the way that we had looked at it before and beginning on July 1. You said Florida position once again to take the lead on NIL legislation as a fix now heads to the governor. Our student athletes were heard, and big thanks to Miami for carrying it across the finish line. Your school as a private institution has been at the forefront of this. What have you seen? And how many of your colleagues have touched base with you about what you know, they're going to get into when their respective states move forward on a law?
Yeah, we've had a lot of conversation nationally and obviously here in our state. Again, I credit our representatives in Tallahassee for, I think, really doing a good job of creating an opportunity for our young people to be able to monetize their name, image, and likeness, while at the same time putting some guardrails in place that I think really protect an institution in intercollegiate athletics that has had such a tremendous impact on so many hundreds of thousands of kids when you look at it, not only here from our state and our country, but from around the world that come to the United States to compete in the sport that they love while earning a degree at a higher institution of higher education that really sets them up for life. And so, you know, we're excited to be able to go forward. I think there's a lot of excitement around the country. I know with each passing day, it seems like other states are addressing it. You have a lot of conversation going on in Washington, D.C. Like so many in my position, I'm a believer that we have to have one standard, and I'm sure that will come. But until that point, we're going to continue to prepare with the Florida law. And if the Florida law is the one that became the one standard, I think it would be a win for students, and I think it would be a win for college athletics.
The value of a sport and building that sport, whether it's something that's, you know, as popular as football or basketball to, you know, like a tennis program that can have great stars but maybe don't get the notoriety. How much pride and satisfaction goes into seeing that happen from your chair?
Oh, a ton of pride. Again, each one of our individual student athletes, we have over 400 here at the University of Miami, come to the university to get a degree, but with a passion for a sport that they love, and they want to win championships, whether that's in football or women's golf or men's basketball or women's basketball or women's soccer, on down the line of our 18 sport offerings. Each one of those young people come here and really have a desire and a passion to be the very best. And so to be a part of that experience and see them having success, you know, really that's what makes the job all the more exciting. Again, when you look at I think one of the big differences between professional athletics and collegiate athletics is we have such a broad spectrum of offerings. And I think that's part of what makes, for me, the job so much more fulfilling than if I was working just with one team. You have, you know, here at Miami, we have 18 different teams. And I know there's schools in the league that have, you know, a far greater number than that. And it's just something that I view as very rewarding and glad to be able to be a little part of that experience and really supporting them and being the very best they can be.
Blake James with us the other day. Roddy, great insight into name, image, and likeness and kind of how, you know, you lay out the vision for this. And Ron DeSantis, the governor, as he said, signed it there on campus in Coral Gables. Sidebar to all this discussion, Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, signed name, image, and likeness yesterday in Athens at Sanford Stadium, ironically, where he went to school, to kind of trigger all the movement for that in this state, the one you and I live in. I told Pac this the other day. We can have the discussion on what name, image, and likeness will be. These states are signing these things into law effective June, July, whenever it's going to take shape. This thing is here now, and we've still got a lot of unknown around it. I think it's going to get really interesting here soon.
Yeah, I think the most unfortunate thing is that there's not going to be a uniform rule across the board when this thing starts. I mean, I think that's a failure on the part of the people who are the most responsible for this. How can you have something this important and this impactful for student athletes, something that can influence student athletes' decision this greatly, be piecemeal like this? It should be something that the NCAA has led on. They have not. And I think it's a failure. I think it's an overall failure in the system that you're going to have. Certain states allow it. Certain states, it's a gray area. And certain states, maybe not. So I think overall, the fact that it's being led by state legislatures is a little, it's a shame, to be honest with you. I am happy for student athletes. I just wish that there was a uniform rule across the country that was going to dictate how they operate. But I think it's not only great for student athletes in the sports that we hear about all the time and that we see on TV, but it's a great opportunity for sports that we don't. You know, my wife is heavily involved in volleyball, and the number of volleyball players that she both coached and or coached club against and or that just are across the country that have massive social media followings amongst not only the volleyball community but the community at large is going to help those student athletes as well. And you can say that for every sport, whether it's women's soccer, men's soccer, gymnastics, all of the sports that are going on across the country. So I think it's a great thing. I just think you know, it's a little sad that the state of Florida is having to pass legislation to do it, and the state of Georgia and all of these states are having to do it by themselves.
Yeah, it's a story we're going to stay with throughout the spring and summer ahead of next August when college football kind of kicks in. And when it does, somebody is going to be the first into the deep end of the pool. Right, Roddy? I mean, that's the reality of name, image, and likeness. You're going to see it pop up and somebody's going to go, okay, here we are, and this is what it looks like. But Blake James with great insight and, there. And when we come back – oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, the thing that's really going to kick it into gear is if you have a player from a state that name, image, likeness is still a gray area, or maybe it's not allowed, decide to go to a school in the state where it is. That's when you're going to start to see the issue kick up even more. If a guy comes out and says, or a woman comes out and says, hey, I chose school X because I'm going to make money off of my name, image, and likeness, and I want that from my college experience.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.